It is a big report day for the grain markets, but before we get to those, we've got a ton of issues to discuss. Trade, energy policy, China making new trading friends. Are the Fed's efforts to slow inflation working? We've got it all covered on this week's Free for All.
Live from the last leg of the March to April via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday Free for All with panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and Ag Radio personality of note, me. Right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Jeff Flory.
All right, Davis, Cubs are in first place in the NL Central. Royals are in last place in the AL Central.
Well, and I'm ready to offer a little analysis on that. I can tell you exactly what happened.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
They did not do the things they needed to win, okay?
Oh.
They didn't use the hitting stick effectively.
Okay.
They didn't do the maneuvers that they needed to do.
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't mean to sound cruel or harsh, but that's just the reality of the situation. I hope in the waiting room that they had a really good discussion about maybe doing a little better, trying harder maybe.
Holy
I don't know.
Smokes. Holy smokes. Wow.
That's my assessment.
That's an excellent assessment. We may have seen the catch of the year already, too, by the Los Angeles Anaheim Angels right fielder. Good grief. He wasn't even looking at the ball. Just kind of threw his hand up there in the air and caught it.
See, that doesn't work out. That doesn't work out for everyone, because I feel like there may have been some dudes on the Royals who weren't looking at the ball from time to time.
Welcome everyone to AgriTalk and the free for all. We've got a lot to discuss on the show today. Of course, Wiesmeyer's here, Sean Haney's here, the handsome newsman Davis Michelson will be part of the conversation today as well. We've got the big reports coming up at, in less than an hour now. We'll be getting the prospective plantings report and the quarterly grain stocks report. We'll have a little bit of discussion on that as well.
Yeah.
All right, buddy, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Bro, I'm going to start with the National Weather Service outlook. Attention, everyone. Something is probably headed your way wherever you may be. Severe thunderstorms likely. Flash flooding possible from the Midwest to the lower Mississippi Valley today. Heavy snow and blizzard conditions forecast from the northern plains to the upper Great Lakes through early Saturday. Critical fire weather concerns and high winds across the southern high plains over the next several days. Just a blanket weather statement here. Everybody, look out. Look out.
Boy, you got that right. It's up in western Wisconsin and southeast Minnesota right now. It's firing up in Missouri and Arkansas. Kentucky's just getting... Heavy rains in Kentucky, southern Indiana, southern Ohio, it looks like. But as you said, the risk for severe weather right in the middle of the country, Iowa, Illinois, Missouri, really heats up this afternoon. So be aware. And plus, hey, you know, we're already 58 degrees. We're heading for like 68 degrees, and we'll probably get, you know, like a half inch, maybe an inch of snow overnight.
Oh, well, that makes perfect sense.
Right.
Well, in other news, former President Donald Trump has become the first president to face criminal charges. A Manhattan grand jury indicted Trump over his role in paying hush money to an adult film star, making him the first former president to face criminal charges with ramifications for the 2024 presidential race.
You know, isn't it funny? We were talking about storms, and then you mentioned Stormy.
Stop.
I'm sorry.
In a 22, wow, I can't even talk now. Nice job. In a 225 to 204 vote, the House passed the GOP's energy package largely on party lines, while the bill is not believed to have a chance of passage in the Democratic-controlled Senate. And President Biden has guaranteed a veto.
Yeah.
The Lower Energy Costs Act could be the starting point for negotiations on streamlining permitting rules for energy projects.
You know, and you look at some of the defense of the president's budget that his secretaries have provided. I know Haney wants to talk about this too, because it's true in the Canadian budget as well. It's just littered with, the green energy incentives out there.
Well, partisan tensions boiled over at a House Ag Appropriations hearing as the GOP battled USDA over the president's proposed budget and regulations. The gloves came off immediately as Chair Andy Harris accused Secretary Tom Vilsack of overstepping his authority on SNAP and the CCC, undermining the Packers and Stockyards Act, and putting climate and equity programs ahead of farmers. Chip, get out the popcorn. The exchange sounded like this.
This is my time.
I'm responding to your comments, Mr. Chairman. I don't think they're
fair.
How
about responding to my questions?
No. Ask a question.
Mr. Secretary, you have the Constitution of the United States backwards. Article 1 is the legislative branch. Article 2 is the executive branch. The executive branch is responsible to the legislative branch, not the other way around.
I don't see that. That was separation of powers. We're equal in our democracy, Mr. Chairman.
Chip, I could have chosen any number of clips to play. I played this one to demonstrate thoughts that hopes of aligning perspectives and priorities are dwindling, as are hopes the farm bill will be passed this year.
We're gonna go straight to Jim on that issue when we get the free-for-all started.
Hey, and a piece of good news. The spot Tampa anhydrous ammonia contract for April fell to $4.35 a metric ton cost and freight. That's down from $5.90 in March, according to Bloomberg's green markets may have hit a floor here, but not likely to firm sharply anytime soon, they say.
All right. All right. Good stuff, Davis. Thank you so much. Let's bring in Jennifer Shike, editor of Farm Journal Sport. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning.
So talk to me about this court case that was recently settled in California.
Well, on March 17th, former Baywatch star Alexander Paul and an animal rights activist, Alicia Santurio, were found not guilty of misdemeanor theft in Merced County, California, after they rescued two chickens from a foster farm's truck back in September of 2021. And it's created a bit of a buzz because Direct Action Everywhere, which is the animal activist group that they are connected with, is saying that this case sets a precedent. But Merced County District Attorney argues that this doesn't set a precedent. An open rescue taking farm animals is illegal and you will be prosecuted. Basically, in this case, the jury found that they were not guilty of that crime, but it doesn't mean that their actions were okay. So, you know, it's just created a buzz. And I caught wind of a DXE gathering that was taking place on a university campus. And so I attended my first I don't even know what you would call it, because
protest,
you know, quite honestly, there were five
display.
People there.
there were how many?
Five. There were five. And, you know, it was just it really made me think about, you know, these people are just lulled into, you know, and convinced they don't understand what's going on in modern animal agriculture. And I guess it's happening closer to home than we think. I think it's easy for us in the Midwest to think it's just on the coast, but it's not.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And if they want to test that precedent, go ahead and show up at some cattleman's and try to rescue some cattle. That I got a feeling they'd learn their lesson pretty quick on that. Jennifer, thank you so much. All right, that's Jennifer Shike, editor of Farm Journal Sport. Free for all next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by United Animal Health, where their science allows you to maximize your genetic potential. Learn more at unitedanh.com.
We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
Hunter Renfro. His name escaped me in the first segment when I was talking about that crazy catch. Mm-hmm. Hunter Renfro is the Angels right fielder. So,
all right.
Yeah.
One
now,
to watch.
Well, I mean, check it out. It is pretty spectacular. He even had to jump. And then he threw his hand up. It was crazy. It was absolutely nuts. So, as I said, Cubs are in the first place of the NL East. Toronto Blue Jays are in first place in the NL East. Welcome, Sean Haney. How are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing great. It is so great to have baseball on TV. It is just fantastic.
Okay,
it,
like, I gotta ask.
Opening day is the best.
Let's get Wiesmeyer in here too, because this guy likes to watch baseball. The Nationals, unfortunately, last place of the NL East right now. Sorry, Jim.
Well, I feel great. We're only one game out.
I think that makes me and Jim birds of a feather, too, by the
way.
Yes,
yes. That's right. Now, the good side, opening games yesterday lasted an average of 2 hours and 45 minutes,
yes.
18 minutes shorter than last year's.
Yeah.
And
the Cubs baseball, game was like 2 hours and 22.
Yes, and base runners stole 21 bases out of 23 attempts. They're taking advantage of the new pickoff rules.
Yes, the new pickoff rules.
And the bigger
rules.
Bases.
And the bigger bases.
Yes.
The little bit of baseball that I did get to see, because the Cubs were playing during the PM show yesterday. But what I saw was that pitch clock, the pitchers get into a rhythm. It starts to feel predictable. And the base runners proved it yesterday that it's more predictable, at least based on day one. Okay.
Yeah.
It feels more predictable at this level. It's crazy, but it is.
And one of the other changes that they were talking about in the Dodger D-backs game last night is one of the big things we've seen people adjust to is the pitchers calling the games, not the catcher. The catcher's confirming the pitch as opposed to the other way around, which is really fascinating too.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And the thing that I probably appreciate the most, and I'm saying this as somebody that when I played a lot of baseball growing up, and I did not play because of my defense, okay? I played because I could put the bat on the ball. The restricting the shift of the defense, I think, is a beautiful thing. A beautiful thing. What do you guys think?
I used to be against getting rid of the shift, and then actually I worked a charity event, and I spent the evening with Ricky Romero, former Blue Jays starter, and he really explained it very well about just how hard it was for people that are pull hitters to hit the other way, because the pitcher knew they wouldn't pitch him to the outside, and so it just became impossible. My mind has been changed. I think it's a good change.
Okay. Jim, you on board on that?
Only if they put the increase the height of the mound again. That's how I started liking baseball.
Okay. All right. Hey, I wouldn't mind doing that. They took like 6 inches off the mound.
Yeah, they wanted more hitting. They wanted more hitting.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly.
My final point here, because we could talk baseball the whole show, is what's really disappointing as a person that works in broadcasting is there are teams, the Toronto Blue Jays is one of them, where the radio broadcast team will broadcast road games from a studio back home instead of being on location.
Yeah,
I think that with as much money as there is in baseball, that is insane.
Yep.
I think that's so wrong.
I agree. It takes away that feeling of being there. And there are great play-by-play and analysts that do the local games. I mean, fantastic talent doing it. And to not send them on the away games, I think is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Okay, Jim, baseball is pretty good theater, but there was some pretty good theater yesterday at the which committee meeting was it?
House Ag Appropriations Subcommittee.
Okay. Tell me about it. What exactly went down?
All three hearings this week gave some theater, but yesterday's was the biggie. You know, Vilsack didn't say it this way, but he wants to redistribute farm program benefits because he keeps saying 90% of farmers have to have off-farm income. Others say what he should be focusing on is why there's not affordable health insurance coverage for many rural families, apparently even with Obamacare.
Yeah.
And Republicans are going to try to limit his Commodity Credit Corporation Act authority. And even if they are successful, Chip, which is not likely, these things come and go. They're not permanent. Now, we once again saw that Vilsack still has a temper when he's challenged too hard. That came through clear. You know, and his farm bill recommendations are not going to go far. That was made clear. And then another one was earlier this week, he commented about the USMCA case or the corn biotech issue with Mexico. And he signaled that a case is coming.
Yeah,
he may have a bit of a, you know, a temper, but he's a tough individual to go after like that because he knows the file so well.
Yes.
Like he just doesn't fluster. Like I just think it's he just shows him. That's a really positive what he shows when he gets in those sorts of back and forth.
Yeah, there was a reference when it comes to the support for farms. There was a reference to, you know, unless a farm has $1 million in revenue, it's not a very viable business. Okay, now, I don't know if I agree with that because it's all about what goes straight to the bottom line. It's not revenue. And what small business with, you know, maybe two or three generations trying to make a living from it is a viable business if it doesn't have $1 million in revenue?
Can't grow and sell locally, Chip. You know, this is really Vilsack 1.5, not 2.0. It's an updated, slightly altered version of what we heard from him his first time around, first year under the Obama administration.
Yes.
Then he tilted more for production agriculture. Now, he admits now that we need production agriculture. He also said that at the Outlook Forum, but not every farmer can grow and sell locally.
Right.
This is where he moves into where I close my eyes and he sounds like a European ag policymaker.
Yeah.
Where we are the most, the success is somehow judged by that. You know, if you're going to make $1 million that line, man alive, that's a low line. When it comes to something like revenue, we're not talking profit, Chip. But I think
it's a
very, very good point because sometimes people say income when they're talking about revenue.
Right.
And that he sounds like he's from Europe. That's plain and simple to me.
Yeah. Jim, the point that you made, I spoke to a group Wednesday night and I made that exact point to the group when Vilsack 1.0 for the first 3 years of it, it was just it made you and I crazy when we were talking about him and writing about his policies and his ideas in Pro Farmer Newsletter. It just made us absolutely crazy. His final 3 years, you know, he had a couple of years in there for a transition. And then his final 3 years, he was very focused on production agriculture.
Yes.
Fast forward to 2.0.
He was there
for the first 6 months.
Yeah, I agree with Sean. He knows his stuff. There's no, and being a lawyer, he can be quite articulate. He can debate and things like that. He has just swallowed the pill of this administration for the authoritarian angles.
Well, and all this fits into his net. When we're talking about farms with $1 million less revenue and needing to prop them up, this fits into the puzzle that he's building in terms of this is why we need carbon pricing programs where we have this secondary on-farm income that all fits into that puzzle that he is really, really pushing.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Here we are. We've got a minute before we get to the break, and this is I'm going to time it because we're going to limit conversation on this because of the clock. Jim, what do you make of the indictment of former President Trump?
Well, unprecedented, kind of a downer. But I want to see the actual details of the indictment, Chip, to be honest. There are several points in it where reports indicate, so I want to see what it is.
Yeah.
Yes.
From an American perspective, who is this benefiting besides Fox News and MSNBC? That's what I really wonder long term.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you, and we don't even know yet if this is going to come to a trial or not. But the one thing that they will get that they are dying to get is a mugshot of former President Donald Trump.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, here we are, half hour away from the quarterly grain stocks and the prospective plantings report. What's going on in the grain trade ahead of it?
Well, we're seeing quite a bit of strength in the soy oil market and the soybean market. Meal futures are now starting to firm up a little bit here, and that's spilling over into the corn market. So probably a little bit more price strength than what I anticipated ahead of these reports. But, you know, we got a lot going on. Prospective plantings and quarterly grain stocks, like you mentioned, and those have been major market movers for the corn and soybean markets historically. So we'll see at the top of the hour what kind of surprises USDA has for us. I'm sure there'll be something in there that's a surprise to someone in the marketplace. And then also, it's end of month and end of quarter today. So, boy, price action could be really volatile into the close once we get the USDA report data and then that positioning for the end of the month and end of the quarter.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you if the end of the month had anything to do with those gains in the bean oil and the beans. You know, May beans within a dime of $15 again. Here we are. Okay.
Take us over to the livestock. Impressive.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
So the cattle market, new contract highs in live cattle futures and chasing the cash market now. So earlier on in the week, we had the strong gains in the futures that kind of pulled the cash higher. Well, the cash traded sharply higher. And now the futures are in chase mode there here to finish up the week. The feeder cattle, they're trading solidly to the upside despite the strength in the corn market this morning. So that's probably telling us a little bit of something there. And then on the hog side of things, we continue to see the cash index slide. And as a result, April futures are under pressure, but everything else is trading to the upside.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you later. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
All right, here we go. Let's get back to the free-for-all. I'm Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us this morning. Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, Davis Michelson. There were other administrative leaders that were in front of Congress this week, Jim. They were there primarily to defend the Biden budget is the primary reason. But man, oh man, did Senator Ted Cruz from Texas, he really laid it on Homeland Security Administrator Mayorkas this week, didn't he?
Well, he deserves most of it. And of course, Cruz is up for re-election too. And that's where he gets his firepower.
Right, right. Haney, did you see it?
I didn't, but I can only, I'm imagining it in my mind.
Oh my goodness. When you get a chance, take a look at it. I mean, there is no respect in either direction. And the thing that really struck me from the Mayorkas testimony was he just refuses to answer questions.
He lies because he keeps saying that the border is secure, and he's been saying that from day one, which it is not. And two, on the fentanyl issue, he just doesn't understand that China is leading it through Mexico into here, you know. Mm-hmm. And another point on that, I remember growing up, we had a lot of indoctrination when I was growing up against drugs. You don't see that much in schools anymore.
Yeah.
Oh,
when it comes to the border, there's a lot of, there's a lot of lying. Like I heard earlier this week, Marjorie Taylor Greene talk about how Canada and Mexico are conspiring together to flood the U.S. And it's just like, what are we doing? It's really hard to come up with a solution on some of these issues if we can't even talk about like the actual reality of what the problems are.
Right.
It escapes us. It's really kind of sad, to be honest.
It absolutely is. Absolutely is. Okay, another one. There is a House committee is investigating the weaponization of some of the federal agencies, including the IRS. And as a witness was testifying, a Twitter Files reporter, Matt Taibbi.
He used to be with Rolling Stone, or he could still be.
Yeah, there. Yeah. As he was testifying, the IRS showed up at his house, and they were talking about how some of the federal agencies have been weaponized. How is that not just an outright threat to this witness? Jim?
Well, this is where former President Trump was spot on during his term as president. And that's why he got in trouble with the IRS, with the FBI, with the CIA, because he was taking them on, pure and simple.
Yep. Davis, what did you make of that?
Well, I thought it was interesting when we talk about the extra funding that is headed for EPA, mm-hmm. and we've got another train derailment. You want to send investigators someplace, I got a couple of suggestions. You might start by having them walk railroad tracks.
Good point.
For funding that all day long.
Let's get out in front of the problems rather than reacting to them. Is that what I hear you saying?
Just a thought. You know, just a thought.
I tell you, okay, so why am I bringing all of this up when we're AgriTalk? The reason that I'm bringing it up is just the general state of the leadership of this administration, you guys. I have not talked much about it on the show, but the more I see, the more concerned I get. And you know, you mentioned it in your commentary this morning, Jim. How are we going to find a way for the Democrats and the Republicans to work together, even on what has historically been one of the most bipartisan bills, one of the most bipartisan efforts in Congress? How in the world are they going to get together on a farm bill?
Yeah, you probably won't now. It's vicious right now, especially in the farm bill, in the farm bill with the food stamp issues, what the Republicans want to have probably draconian worker requirements. And on the Democratic side, don't want to give hardly any give for Title I. So how can a Republican support a farm bill in that regard? But I want to throw a foreign policy element in this. With all this awkwardness of issues going on in the U.S., how do you think China's viewing this? There are more than a few stories I've read in Foreign Policy and elsewhere that China is gearing up for a war, period.
I'm trying to connect dots. Okay, I'm trying to connect dots. Everybody is sitting back and saying, my gosh, why all of the sudden are we stringing together all of these corn sales to China?
Dude, I've been thinking that all week, and I don't want to sound like a crazy person saying, what if they're laying away?
Maybe they're going to build up their stocks just ahead of, and I mean get them in, get those corn buys in country before they make a move. So everything that's happening starting to feel like there's going to be a move made on Thailand before the end of the year.
We've been here before.
Taiwan. Yeah, but Taiwan, okay, but here's Taiwan, one of the arguments against this, okay, is that do they even need to make a move the way that we seem to be imploding on ourselves?
I don't know.
Like, well,
it
could be viewed that they're waging war by making peace with everybody else.
Yep.
They brought Iran and Saudi Arabia together, which is a huge deal. I mean, this is a religious holy war that they have brought peace to. I don't think that they want to continue supplying weapons to Russia to keep the war going. I think that they want to cool things down. They've got this whole Belt and Road thing. They got to run commerce to Europe straight through Ukraine. They need it quiet over there. They may beat us by being better peacemakers.
Let me drop some news to you. I got to be careful how I say this. certain government agencies have inquired to certain people on the ag committees, how would the U.S. trade policy react if China went into Taiwan? I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Jim, I saw your comments on that this morning, and I thought to myself, wouldn't that be something to actually come up with a plan on how to handle it in advance so that China knows, okay, here's what you are risking.
Yes.
I don't think there's any way that they're going to get together to get that done, Jim.
No, but at least they should talk about it. The ag sector should be very upfront on this one to say, if that were to happen, whether this year, 2 years, 3 years from now, what are the impacts? And as I brought up this morning, would the U.S. government allow commodity sales already on the books, still not shipped, to still be exported to China? Would farmers be compensated if there's a cutoff on trade? We've been here before.
Yep.
Well, it's sort of, you look at how different countries reacted to what's happened with Russia invading Ukraine and apply some of those same sort of principles of why you know, if there was some sort of conflict like that, why would you, there'd be a lot of questions. Why would you ship products like corn or soybeans to a country that would be deemed the enemy at that point?
Yeah, and Canada should know this. USTR Catherine Tai hit China for what she called weaponizing trade against partner countries. She said Beijing turns the spigot on when things are good, turns it off when things are bad. I think Canada knows that.
Oh, very well. I got many, many examples up my sleeve on that one. No kidding.
That's right.
Rules-based trade out the window.
Okay, so President Xi goes to Moscow, gets friendlier with President Putin, and then brokering the deal with Saudi Arabia, brokering the deal with others. It put Brazil in that category. And you guys, I keep flashing back to the 2023 Top Producer Summit and the final panel that we had talking about global grain flows, and we had former ambassador Kip Thom was there virtually, and it was almost a throwaway comment from him that made everybody in the room almost jump when he says, you know, we worry about China making a move on Taiwan. Look at the vulnerabilities that exist in Russia. What if China makes a move on Russia? Everybody assumed that he was talking about a military move. What if this is the move that he was talking about, and it's a strategic relationship that China will be kind of pulling the puppet strings, Jim?
Well, when he left Moscow last week, there was the video that showed him telling Putin, you know, we're doing things here together that hasn't been seen in 100 years.
Right.
So, yes, I think you're spot on.
Well, meanwhile, you've got
It's not me. I think it was Ambassador Thom was the one that was spot on.
And you've got Emmanuel Macron and von der Leyen and even Pedro Sanchez packing their bags to go visit Beijing.
Lula.
I have run this by every geopolitical person that I interview on our show, and everybody says, bingo, Russia is the one that's in real trouble here when it comes to being so reliant on China going forward.
Wow. The world is turning upside down. It is realigning. I don't think that there is any question about that. We've got a free-for-all going, that is for sure. Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, Davis Michelson, and me here on AgriTalk.
The 2023 Bracket Busters Challenge presented by Case IH is underway. Who's still in the game? Find out. Head to agweb.com now through April 3rd to check the leaderboard.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Free for all. I'm Chip. Got Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst, Real Agriculture's Sean Haney, Handsome Newsman Davis Michelson. Davis just had the liner there on the Bracket Busters. I'm going to look at the women's side right now and just say, if you're not watching that game tonight, you're missing out. Iowa versus South Carolina.
Unbeaten South Carolina, in fact.
Unbeaten, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. They've got last year's player of the year. Iowa's got this year's player of the year. It's going to be fantastic.
Those Iowa gals are tough. Confirm.
The South Carolina team is awfully tough as well. Maybe not as tough as their coach, but awfully tough. Awfully tough. That Don Staley is something else. Okay. You know what, Jim? I want a little more color on Katherine Tai and the U.S. trade rep, because she was also in front of Congress this week. How did that go for her?
Well, that was really last week, and what she was she was charged with being by one Republican as being too nice, Chip. So she took the gloves off and she said, let me tell you something. So I think she's being challenged now, rightfully so. And now we're going to see the true Katherine Tai. But she continues to say, Chip, that they're not going to go the route of either bilaterals or multilaterals. It's their so-called worker-centered framework agreement. But even some Democrats are against that. So I think increasingly so, they're going to have to alter their trade policy stance.
Okay, so what does that mean for a trade deal with the UK? Because we saw this morning the UK is going to join the CPTPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So what does that mean for the US in trying to get a free trade agreement with the UK?
It should mean a breaking of their own rules and that we have a bilateral with the UK. We'll see, but that's going to take a while.
I think that's going to take a long while.
You need TPA. You need fast track authority restored in Congress. And there's both Democrats and Republicans who may go against that.
Right. Right. Jim, I think it'll just be in the form of an executive order if it does happen within the next 2 years.
That's the way that this administration has been going. Yeah. Now, they've had some successes in certain regions of the country, you know, but interestingly so, I talked to a number of officials in this town who go around the world, and they're seeing, like in Africa, signs in Africa, not only in Swahili, but all in U.S., but now Mandarin. Isn't that interesting?
Interesting. Wow. Okay. Another trade issue, Cargill and Viterra say that they will not be exporting Russian grain after July 1. Jim, was that their decision or was it Russia's?
I think a combination, because Russia's flexing their muscles and want more and more control over their grain. I think that was also another reason for the 60-day extension that may not be further extended. So
that's
I think it's really reality, Chip, don't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Was it in your commentary that I read that we should be watching out for, you know, the resurfacing of an old Soviet era grain export arm from Russia?
No, that probably wasn't. Bloomberg has done the best reporting on this. I applaud them for this, but I think it was in the Bloomberg reports.
Okay.
Yeah. I guess on one hand, it's becoming incredibly difficult or risky to own assets in a country like Russia with all of this happening. I haven't checked out, followed the markets that closely today, but, you know, those assets, even though it's not, you know, Cargill and Viterra and ADM's reconsidering their decision, but the other two have already said they're leaving, those assets are still in place. They're just going to be owned by somebody else.
And
I guess whether it's Russia or it's the Chinese, it's not exactly in the hands of friendly partners.
Right.
Yes, and we reported last week, Chip, some a notation that with all those landmines in Ukraine, increasingly so, their production is going to be lowered to such a degree that Ukraine's going to have to import certain commodities and our humanitarian assistance. That's a big change.
Absolutely.
Was it Matt Gaetz that put forward a bill this week where it was questioning the U.S. supporting Ukraine going forward?
Yeah.
I think we're going to hear that's Ukraine's worst nightmare.
That's right.
That Europe and the U.S. cut off assistance.
Yep.
Then
yep.
They're done for.
Exactly. Jim, is the Fed action to slow inflation working?
It is. You saw the Fed's favored inflation rate cooled somewhat lower than expectations, Chip. And I think now what we're going to see with a likely recession the second half of this year, inflation's going to surprise to the downside, I would say, during the second half of the year.
Consumer spending, though, is reducing, but it's the consumer's still spending money, so they still are kind of pushing through this. So that consumer spending is definitely a number to watch in the go forward too.
Absolutely, it is. Okay, you guys, one last thing that I want to mention, and this is getting back to just how upside down our leadership is right now. This is a tweet from Nancy Pelosi talking about former President Trump's indictment. She said, quote, "The grand jury has acted upon the facts and the law. No one is above the law, and everyone has the right to a trial to prove innocence. Hopefully, the former president will peacefully respect the system which grants him that right." The way I understand the system, Jim, aren't you innocent until proven guilty?
Yes, that's called a 180-degree turn.
I can't understand for the life of me how we've gotten to this point. We've been, I feel like I've been too quiet, that we have been too quiet on issues like this for too long. I don't know. Maybe I'm just getting older.
No, it's not a good development. I don't care whether you're Democrat or Republican. Things are awry right now. Yeah,
absolutely. Guys, thank you so much for today. Appreciate all the time and the effort. And thank you for listening. Really appreciate that. We're going to have report details this afternoon in a conversation with Shelby Myers from EverAg here on AgriTalk.